Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out. And you guys can look it over together. You can ask questions. You get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trading your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on SiriusXM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday. PodcastOne.com, iTunes, and anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening wherever you do so around the world, however you listen. It is greatly appreciated. And excited to bring you this interview this week. I think you're going to really enjoy it. It is with one of my favorite newer artists out there. And we'll get to that in just a second. I just got back from L.A., another great trip there, hosted a show with The End Machine, which is basically Dokken with Robert Mason singing instead of Don Dokken. Great to see them, and real good new album from them as well. It's the age-old problem with those bands, though, that are sort of those super groups, if you will. How much can they do, considering all the other guys are in various other bands? It becomes very, very difficult for them to be able to to focus on promoting new bands. But this band, End Machine, George Lynch, Mick Brown, Jeff Pilson, and Robert Mason turned in a few great performances just to establish to everybody that they were a real band and that they were going to at least play some, at least three shows, which is what they ended up doing. And the show that I went to, Mick Brown wasn't even able to play that show because he had a conflict, so Will Hunt filled in on drums and really was great as well. So it was a good show there. Saw John 5 on Saturday at the Whiskey in L.A. John 5 is just a master guitar player, a close friend, and had a sold-out show there at the Whiskey. Each time I see him do his solo thing, it gets a little bigger, a little better. He had Michael Anthony, Corey Taylor, and Fred Corey come out and join some Van Halen songs with them, which was just so great. And Rob Zombie was in the house watching. Really, really good time there. And then this past Monday, I hosted the latest in my monthly broadcast series from the Rainbow in LA. It's called the Trunk Nation LA Invasion. Had a great one, wild one this past Monday with Rob Zombie, David Coverdale, and Marilyn Manson. And man, did we have some fun. And I thank everybody that came out. So if you missed that, you can hear it on demand right now on the SiriusXM app. And you can also hear it replay this weekend on SiriusXM 106 volume, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. Just Coverdale in hour number one, who was just shot out of a cannon, and we had so much fun with him. And then in hour two, Zombie and Manson together, who are touring together for the fourth time coming up. And it was as entertaining and as much of a train wreck as you would have expected it to be. So bottom line is nobody disappointed, and we had a great time. And thanks to everybody who came out to the Rainbow. I'll be back there again to do it again on May 6th from the Rainbow with another major special guest to be announced. So let me remind you also, May 5th, the Dio Cancer Fund Ride for Ronnie event. If you're in Encino, come out and join us for that. All the proceeds go to the Dio Cancer Fund. That is coming up May 5th in Encino, California. The Ride for Ronnie, DioCancerFund.org for more information there. Like I said, May 6th will be the next LA invasion from the Rainbow. April 25th, I'll be hosting Whitesnake at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Come on out if you're in South Florida and see me there as well. As usual, everything is on EddieTrunk.com. All the appearances, and follow on Twitter and Instagram at Eddie Trunk. And there's also a fan page on Facebook. Finally, let me remind you that what you hear on the podcast here, interview-wise, all originates on my daily radio show on SiriusXM 106 Volume. The channel is called Volume. The show is Trunk Nation. Again, the number is 106 on your dial. And I'm on every day, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, live, talking rock with you, taking your calls, interviews, etc. And that show replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. And full shows are available on demand on the SiriusXM app. You only are getting a tiny taste of what I do on a daily basis on Volume. If you're in the U.S. and Canada, hope you come on board if you are not already. The interview you're about to hear this week did indeed originate on my show on Volume a couple weeks ago, more like 3 weeks ago to be exact, maybe a little longer actually, from the studios in Los Angeles where I often work as well. And it is with the guitar player and the co-founding member of the band Rival Sons, Scott Holiday. If you are unfamiliar with Rival Sons, you need to educate yourself, my friends. I have been singing this band's praises now for probably about 7 years. And to me, they are one of the best and most important rock bands we have emerging today. They have just released their major label debut and their sixth album. They are now signed to Atlantic Records. Feral Roots is the name of the new record. I think it's the best one they've made. To me, they have probably the best singer in rock in Jay Buchanan. It boggles my mind as a rock fan, the hoopla over Greta Van Fleet, and this is not to knock on them in any way. I still don't know quite what to make of them, but I am shocked at the unbelievable amount of success that they have had. When you consider a band to me like Rival Sons is light years beyond them in terms of their ability as songwriters and where they are right now and doing something kind of similar, but not nearly as Zeppelin-like. I mean, Rival Sons are certainly Zeppelin-like, but nothing to the degree of Greta Van Fleet. And it's a comparison that I see made a lot. There is an interview with Rival Sons in Classic Rock magazine, and all they did was talk to them about Greta Van Fleet. And, of course, the guy said all the nice things and took the high road and all that. And, look, Greta is way younger and are doing tremendously well, which is great for rock. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is just Rival Sons were basically doing what they are doing, but, in my opinion, way, way, way better a longer time ago, but just in America, at least, kind of fell between the cracks. They did not fall between the cracks in England. Even though Rival Sons is an American band, they have been embraced greatly in England. where they are often on the cover of magazines and do tremendous business. Now, here in the U.S., it's starting to change, too, because they have opened every show on Black Sabbath's farewell tour. They are currently on tour in America with about half the show's advanced sellouts. So don't get me wrong, Rival Sons have their fans and are doing quite well in their native U.S., but to me, they should have been huge and they should be a household name, and they just aren't quite yet in America. It's getting there, though, and like I said, major label album, the new one, Feral Roots, I think is probably the best record they've made so far. I love the band. To me, they're everything that's great about hard rock music. Huge riffs, innovative, cool guitar playing, unbelievable lead singer, and all real, all live, all in your face. They jam. They're just a real live rock band. No BS, no tracks, no auto-tune, no over-the-top production crazy stuff. Just all the things that are great about rock music in one exceptional band. So on this week's show, if you're a fan, I think you'll enjoy the conversation. If you are not a fan, hopefully you'll learn a little bit about this band and take the next 45 minutes to listen to this interview and check out Feral Roots. Listen to a song like Too Bad. Listen to a song like Sugar on the Bone. Listen to a song like Back in the Woods. I mean, just kick-ass stuff. And get into this band that I've been screaming about for so, so long. And you can see them currently on tour. See if there's a date coming near you in the U.S. So Scott Holiday, who is one of the band's founding members and chief songwriters, is the interview you're about to hear. It happened about 3 weeks ago in the L.A. studio, just as the band were getting ready to go out on the tour that they're currently on. We talk about the new record. We talk about all the touring they've done. They've opened for the Stones. They've just had a ton of cool gigs that they've played. And, you know, where they're headed with things. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. So that's coming up in a matter of minutes on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Don't go anywhere. Scott Holiday from one of my favorite newer bands, Rival Sons, up next.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, check out the hit podcast based on the Emmy-nominated A&E series Cold Case Files on Podcast One. Listen to powerful stories of crimes almost forgotten by the passage of time with interviews of the people involved as investigators shine a new light on these cases and bring those responsible to justice. Download new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get into it. My conversation with Scott Holiday, guitarist of the band Rival Sons. Enjoy this on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. It's good to see you, man.
Sir Edward Trunk, welcome to L.A.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the hell out of you making the journey from the O.C., Huntington Beach, to be exact.
Yeah.
To drive into L.A. on a Monday morning.
I drudged my way in beautiful 75-degree weather for a full terrible hour. I think I'm going to make it. Okay.
Was it horrible? Was it? It should take, what, 20 minutes?
I think probably a half an hour, 35 minutes, and it was like an hour and 10. I don't care. I'm working from the phone anyway. That's okay. So yeah. I just did the morning checklist and, you know, to handle business.
But I've had people who are right here in the general L.A. area, and they're like, what time you started at 11? And I was like, yeah. Like, oh man, traffic's really bad.
I'm gonna have to leave at 8 in the morning.
Even for 11, though, I could see if my show was on at 7 in the morning.
I know.
But it's
know.
Like 11, 11:30, 12 o'clock. They're like, oh, it's really bad. But you've lived here your whole life, so you're probably just used to it, right?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. To be honest, I live one block off the beach in Huntington, and I just really barely even leave. I'll come to L.A. for you, but even my manager's here. In the room, I barely even come up there. I always make people come down to the beach. I'm like, look, we're going to talk business. We're either going to talk it right by the ocean. It's going to be very nice. Or I have to drive into the city. That's not nice. So everybody come here to the beach.
Well, I'm the same way because I live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And New York City is, mileage-wise, like 40-something miles from where I live.
Yeah.
But it's a two-hour ordeal easily each way.
It's a whole pain in the ass getting into New York. It's a whole thing.
Not to mention when you get in and you got to park a car, it's $50.
Yeah.
And then the Lincoln Tunnel to go through is $16. And you're like, my show's only 2 hours a day. It's double the amount of time I'm on the air.
And you know what they do when they park your car? It's full of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Exactly. But Huntington Beach is beautiful, man. You know, I was there, I think, for the first time last year. Sammy Hagar did a thing on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
That concert
Sammy.
Deal. And it was really a cool event. He's doing it again. And I hosted the after party. It's a beautiful area there, man.
Yeah, it's fun. And they do an open there, the U.S. Open Surf Contest. And it's nice. It's funny. This week it's rained like all month here in California, at the beach, L.A., whatever. And that's rare. That's like emergency on planet Earth.
I know.
For us, you know. In the meantime, I'm touring through Europe, and it's like snowing and raining. It's 30 below, and they're like, nothing's wrong. This is a warm winter for us, is what they're telling me. But yeah, it got clear this week, and it got up to like 75, 76 degrees. And I'm close enough to the ocean that you can, as soon as I like open my doors and windows and stuff in the morning, you can hear, it might as well be mid-July. People are walking their dogs. Girls are in bikinis. People carrying their surfboards. Every parking lot is full. Just old cars cruising everywhere. It's summertime.
You're born and raised in that area right there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Covina in the Valley, but I ended up moving, I don't know, around junior high to the beach and kind of stayed.
You guys travel extensively, and I know that Rival Sons pretty much since day one has seemingly, and correct me if I'm wrong, more embraced in England and Europe quicker than here in America. Would that be an accurate statement?
That's accurate. We signed to a label really quickly as Rival Sons, and the label's called Earache, who does a lot of hardcore metal.
Yeah.
Like really heavy metal. Like Napalm Death and, Morbid Angel.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of all the very aggro
names. Stuff's more, it's more extreme for my own personal taste, so I don't really know it all myself. But
it's hard as hell. Anyway, we were there first.
Grindcore stuff.
Yeah. That's it. So we were there first rock and roll.
How the hell did that happen?
To be honest, I had a different manager at the time, a guy named Tom Gonsola, great guy, and he was telling me that, hey, this label, Earache, they want to sign you. And we were going, I told him it's a joke. I said, they're taking a piss out of us. They're like, you know, I'm thinking if I was at a metal label with all my buddies, we would sit there and go, hey, let's sign that blues band, that blues rock band. This will be hilarious. Tell them we're going to do it. And so I go, they're joking, man. There's no way that label wants to sign us for real. So it kind of went away, and then it came back, and he said, they're not kidding. It's a legitimate offer, and it's not a bad offer. So we went, okay, let's have a meeting. And we talked with Dan Tobin over there, and it was legit. They were just trying to expand what they had done. And
I understand that. I mean, that's admirable. I mean, decades ago, when I was way younger, I was vice president of the label Megaforce.
Oh, yeah.
Which signed Metallica, the first label to sign Metallica.
Epic.
And we were known for Metallica and Manowar and...
Dude, Manowar, the best rock posters in history.
The loincloths.
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to cut in, but I got to cut in really quick.
Yeah.
And I heard this story from somebody, a tour manager, that he was tour managing that band. And one time he went backstage to go get them for the show. I think he was just like filling in for another guy. And he went back there and he said, no shit. They were literally in the loincloths with the furry boot things and had like medieval swords. And they were like, you know, Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, that's the real deal.
It's amazing.
It's the real deal. I mean, I know those guys. It's Joey who runs that band. Yeah. It's the real deal. They're retiring now, actually. They're ending. But we had Manowar. We had Overkill. We had Testament. We had all this very the early days of thrash metal is what we had. And then when I got there, I was like, hey, I'd like to maybe diversify a little bit and try to get some straight up rock bands that maybe we could actually get on the radio and do something with. So I understand the mentality of the label doing
that. Is that why you guys signed Hanson?
No, we didn't sign Hanson. I signed Ace Frehley.
Sorry.
That was the first.
That's not that far of a reach. That's rad.
Hanson versus Ace Frehley?
I'm saying Ace is great. Of course you didn't sign Hanson, man.
Oh. It's not that crazy that I would have signed Hanson.
Okay.
We're all over the map here. Do you know that Hanson does a big thing in Tulsa, Oklahoma?
No. And I think those guys are all wonderful people and everything. I was just looking for an outlandish enough group for you. I got to go further.
I signed Wham.
There we go.
Yeah, no. Hanson, since we're all over the place, Hanson actually does a thing. You know their big song is called Mbop?
Of course. Okay. Everyone knows that.
So they've got a song called, they've got a festival in Oklahoma where they're from called Mhop. And it's a beer festival, and it's freaking huge.
I thought that was their franchise where they teamed up, like co-op with IHOP. Sorry.
When you signed to this metal label, Earache,
yeah,
were there other suitors as well at the time, or were they pretty much at that time the only option?
No, we were talking to other people because our management was a big management firm. You know, we were with the... oh, my gosh, my mind slipped right now. We were with Irving.
Part of Azoff.
Part of Azoff, I'm sorry, right. Yeah. So it was a part of the big machine, right. You know. So we were talking to people, but nothing was coming in that was serious enough or real enough. Unfortunately, we were going through then, and still are, through an era where a lot of the majors want to – they're just – I don't want to say something bad about them. What they're really doing is changing the way they do business. And people stopped buying records on a large part. So they had to change how they made money, which also meant they aren't going to give bands a bunch of money. And which also meant if you want us to use our resources and our company to help you, we can. That's what we do. But how are we going to get paid back? It ain't on the record now. I'll tell you how. It's going to be on the things you do well. Your merch will do good. We need a piece. Your touring will do something. We need a piece. And everybody, for a minute, they call that the 360 deal.
Yeah,
and for a minute, that looked really, you know, to a guy like me, that's more old school. I was like, that's a bunch of bullshit because that's the shit you hang on to.
Right.
That's how we live as
right.
a band.
Right.
But what where we're at right now for younger people listening or people that want to understand, that's how labels will make money back. On this building of people that they hire to work, you know, radio teams and marketing, and there's only one way they're going to be able to do it. Then it was very ugly, so these deals were coming in. We're going 360. They can kiss our ass. We don't want to do that. And the deal we did with Earache wasn't that. It was
on those 360. Did they want a piece of your live shows as well?
Yeah,
the receipts, like actually what your guarantee is every night.
It's complex, but yes, it's not like they're just nightly raping you. You know, they usually put like a max, like a ceiling on it. Like, we're going to take you, and if once you guys already make X amount, but once you make beyond that amount, we want a piece of that, a percentage of that.
And is it
the old
in perpetuity, or is it only while you're recording for them?
Yeah, no.
I'm not talking about specific to what you guys were looking at, but
I don't
just
know.
In general. Is
I would
that
say
what
there's
they throw
definitely
out there?
There's definitely labels that will do in perpetuity on everything and give them nothing.
So
and yeah, they do that. Yeah. There's bad people out there, you know. You know, we're with Atlantic now. And
well, that's a big move. We should talk about that. Yeah. This new album, which we're going to get into in a second, which is phenomenal, Feral Roots, the first record for Rival Sons, really on a major label,
yeah.
Part of the big machine, Atlantic Records, doesn't get more major than that.
Entirely.
But you actually, is it Dave Cobb's label, your producer? Like, it actually, or is it a secondary imprint of Atlantic? What is it?
I'd have to, it's like we're splitting hairs. It kind of happened at the same time because Dave had this thing going, and it's with the Electra side with LCS, and we wanted to do something together, and it just so happened that people over at Atlantic proper wanted to sign the band, and it kind of just became this thing where my A&R guy looked over and went, I like this band. I want to sign this band. And talk to Dave about it. Like, you're the producer. What do you think? And Dave said, I want to sign this band. And I think I'm giving you a very quick, you know, understanding of it. I think they just kind of looked at each other and went, we want to sign the band. Let's just do it like that. And we were really adamant that we were an LCS band. Because if you look at Dave's label and what he's doing, which is his subsidiary that mainly works through Elektra, but now we'll do it through Atlantic with them. Atlantic was going to sign us anyway. We just wanted to do this co-op thing and be on both, you know?
Any added pressure going in to make this record, knowing that it was the first for a major label?
I mean, there's a little pressure, but it's our seventh. We know what we're doing. We know what we want. I think there's more pressure just on us, me to Jay, me to the guys in the band, for us to, like, move forward in the right direction and feel like we're making something good. Really, any art like that, you know, if you are doing the right thing, all the other pressure, everyone's going to love it or whatever. As long as I can look at my partners and go, we did a good thing. That's good what we did. I know in my heart we went the right direction. We created something with value. You know, it's valuable to us. That was the biggest pressure, probably, just making sure on our seventh album we were able to take the step forward. But I'd be lying if I didn't say there was some extra, you know, thought that, hey, we're finally on a label that's like has a little extra power and muscle and reach, a lot more.
But you guys laid a hell of a base with the previous six records in terms of the work you put in, relentless touring. I mean, you did it the way you do it. You did it the... You really built a base. You built an audience. You built from the ground up. You went out there. And as I said, beyond the label being based in England, I've talked to you about this before. I get all the British rock magazines. I mean, from the beginning, from the jump, it seems like they loved Rival Sons. Had you guys on the cover of Classic Rock magazine and all this stuff. So it had they had to have a different, beyond the fact that the label's based there, there had to be some other sort of deeper connection that they found in your music more quickly than here in America over there. Do you ever kind of pinpoint that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm asked that a lot. I've been trying to pinpoint it for the last, you know, 5 years or whatever. Like, let's take this apart and see what happened. And it starts with the label being there, and the label really worked their resources out there. So we had an open door to all the magazines and radio stations immediately. And as soon as they peeked in and gave us a look, they liked it. They just genuinely liked it. You know, this is a small label. They're not paying people off, or they're having some strong arm acts that they're going to bend for us. You know, what's happening is that they just liked what Eric was peddling. And I think they also thought, this is kind of like really audacious. There's a lot of audacity in this, like, band choosing to go with this metal label. That's weird. There's also a lot of audacity for this metal label to sign this act. This is a story. And I think everyone found it newsworthy and found our music, that it worked and they liked it. So we got good write-ups and good reviews immediately. And that's really how you start your career.
And the press means something still in England. Like, those magazines and those reviews, they carry weight there still.
Yeah, I think they still mean things here too. It's just things are a little bit different.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
I agree to some degree. There's it's a little bit watered down.
When was the first time you went out of the country with Rival Sons? What was it, to go to England?
You won't believe. You won't believe it. The first tour we did was in 2012. I want to say 2011, 2012, and we opened for Judas Priest.
Really?
And I was thinking, why would they want to take us? That doesn't seem like a good match. I was thinking, why would we take that? The whole thing sounds wrong to me. But that's what we had. And that was the best thing we had. And they really wanted to take us. So we said, yeah, let's do it. And it was us, and I think Queensryche played, and Priest. And it was all through the UK, even their hometown, you know. So I thought, for sure, we're going to get piss bottles thrown at us. We're going to be up there playing
Birmingham, birthplace of metal.
We're going to be in Brum getting piss thrown at us. And we're going to be playing, you know, ballads and really fuzzy blues garage rock kind of. And it's not going to translate to these people. I don't know. And it did translate very much. And it worked really, really well every night. And we were just going, wow, we had no idea. This audience is waiting. It's like they want this.
Yeah.
And it went really, really good. And we did a bunch of festivals, too, during that throughout Europe. And we were traveling in a splitter van. Not a new one. Not a nice new splitter van. In our buddy's splitter van in the UK, with no tour manager, with our front of house guy, with two bench seats in the back facing each other. 90-degree angles. No air conditioning. No heat. And we're going through, like, Italy in the heat of summer, like the dead of summer this year. It's hot. It's like 90 degrees out. And it was when I was drinking, and we're in the back with hot vodka Red Bulls, sweating, smoking in our underwear, just looking at each other. And it's like, you know, the old Bugs Bunny cartoons when they're really hungry and he looks at his friend and he turns into like a chicken or something, like he's gonna eat. We're just looking at each other going, I'm gonna fucking kill you, dude. So just out of nowhere, we just start
hallucinating.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. We're just attacking somebody. You know, before you know, I got Miley on the ground and I'm sitting on him and we're both in our underwear like, take it out. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, shut up.
Welcome to the glamour of rock and roll on tour with Judas Priest.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, is here's a band that you say, you know, is a bluesy, you know, you certainly have hard rock elements to what you do. You've got all these, this incredible mix of what makes Rival Sons so cool. But you've now opened for pretty much two of the most iconic metal bands in history because you opened more recently, the entire Black Sabbath farewell tour.
That's right.
Around the globe.
That's right.
So it's crazy when you think of that like, Rival Sons, the kings of metal, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, we're here. Appreciate us.
But has it surprised you how those metal audiences have gravitated to you?
And it's a real blessing because I find the two most loyal audiences in music, in the world of music, there's two, and I think it's metal and country. Like, they stay with their artist. Yeah. Like a bad album, hey, it's okay. Wait, one more. I'm going to listen to the other ones until you make the next one. Like, you know, indie rock, it's like, oh, I saw a picture of you in Star, and those shoes were super lame. I hate your record now. It's like really fickle, you know? And alternative, it's really fickle. But and rock is, as we've talked about and debated, I am not going to be somebody that says it's dead. That's ridiculous. But it's like it's lost in the shuffle of everything a little bit right now. You know, even for a band like us, who I find not an active rock band at all, I don't really understand it. We just had a number one on active, and I'm going, oh, okay, that's our thing? And we're against bands that I don't think sound anything like us. I think, if anything, we'd probably be more on the alternative side, but we're nowhere in sight on the alternative side. And then if you see what tops alternative, you're like, is that even alternative rock? What is that?
I've never understood all the
is
labels.
Is that some synth pop? Or what the hell is that? So it's weird. It's weird right now. So I'm happy that, getting back to the point, that the metal audience embraced us. We did things like Hellfest in France. You know this festival?
I've heard of it. I heard it's great, actually.
It's insane. You should go. It's insane.
Cleason, France or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You walk in, there's like a giant Grim Reaper, and it's like super hellish, but everybody's in black, and it's hot, and you're like, you poor motherfuckers. It's too hot to wear that. Anyway, we did that same deal where we're the bluesy, rockier band on this really heavy festival. And I wonder how these face painted, all black wearing people are going to feel about this. And sure enough, this is what we decided, me and Jay, let's play extra ballads tonight. And that's what we did. And you know
did
what
you
happened?
Really?
That's what we did. We played like On My Way. We played like, you know, all of our like most like tear jerking jams. And you know what happened? Lighters went up, and all those people that had running makeup, all their mascaras were running. It's like they're emotional, man.
Oh, my God. You touched an emotional nerve with the meddlers at Hellfest, no doubt.
Yeah, they were like, ooh, deserting me. Ooh, I miss you, Dad.
All of a sudden, Jay starts singing in Cookie Monster voice.
That's it.
Amazing. Well, that's one of the cool things, many cool things about Rival Sons is the appeal that there's something in the music, I think, for everybody. But for me, I just love it because it's, to me, it's as real and from the heart and as great. It's all the things that make rock great, in my opinion. And I'm just so into the new record. I want to talk specifically a little bit about the new record, Feral Roots, which came out a couple weeks ago. We'll get into that and more with Scott Holiday of Rival Sons. We'll talk about this too. It's really cool to see America really starting to come online now for this band after all the success in Europe and England, where there's advanced sellouts on the upcoming tour already, which is awesome. So we'll talk a little bit more about what's coming up in America and the new record with Scott right after this.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Baseball season has arrived.
With the start of baseball season, Podcast One Sportsnet has all your bases covered. With the Dan Patrick Show.
You can't even spell strike.
The Rich Eisen Show.
But it doesn't matter if you get it moving if nobody's getting on base.
And Baseball and Chill.
Mike Trout will be paid close to $500 million. That is more money than you would ever know what to do with.
Don't miss Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen, or Baseball and Chill all summer long on Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So I'm talking to Scott during the break, and he just casually says something like, well, yeah, when we played with the Stones, like anyone can. Like, when was that? When did you play with the Stones?
What was it, last November, I think?
A tour or a one-off? What
we
was
did,
it?
We did a few shows in Europe with them.
Direct support?
Yeah.
And did you meet them?
We met them, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
And anything you want that you can, anything out of the norm? Or
I've signed a waiver. I'm barely NDA? I'm already starting to breach that waiver.
You have an NDA about the fact that you opened for the Stones?
Yeah, you can't talk, can't look, don't even say.
Don't look me in the eye?
No. We met them. The thing is, the Stones are more famous than everybody else, like the most famous band that you can name right now. Right. Let's just pick maybe the biggest rock band on the planet would be the Foo Fighters. Okay, right? Something really big or something. I'm trying to think of something that's just big and across a lot of genres or whatever. They are super crazy, crazy fans of the Stones. There's no comparison of what a Foo Fighters is to what a Stones are.
Right,
they
course.
Themselves would not argue.
Right.
So when you're meeting the Stones, they're more popular than most people in government. Probably more people know who Mick Jagger and Keith Richards are than know who Donald Trump are
right.
in the world
right.
collectively.
Right, right.
So being around these people, it's literally like you're around the most famous people living on Earth. That's something. It's far out.
So how does the meeting go down? Like you're,
it goes down really, it's really Disney. And I'm not putting it down or anything. I thought it was fascinating and it was wonderful and I'll never forget it.
It's like a
but
brokered
not,
thing though, I'm
that's
assuming, right?
Right?
Like,
that's right.
Okay, they're going to be here and we're going to bring you in sort of thing?
Correct. And it's the only one we've ever done because we've done so many. We were talking about Kiss earlier. We've done Deep Purple. We've done Sabbath. Sabbath was a little like that, but not really. We were with them so long. We became friends and we were able to move around easy. I can go knock on Tony's door and he'd be like, hey, man, come in, grab a beer. Let's hang, you know? And
it was you guys with Sabbath in Vegas.
Yeah.
And you came up to where I was in the box.
That's
after
right.
We played.
That's right. We
you
were
came
in the
up
box.
And said hello. Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But the Stones is different.
It's different. It's a little different. You know, we only did three shows anyway. We went out for a tour, and we were in, like, Germany, Switzerland, and something else.
Were they aware of your music? Did they comment on
yeah.
your music at
actually,
all?
The cool thing is the crew, they were, like, off their tits for the band. Like, all the crew on stage and everybody working for them were like, oh, my God, yes. So every time we intersected them, they were like, dude, we're crazy fans of the band. And I'm like, yes, that's great. And their stage manager, who was really wonderful, pulled me aside right before we went on the first night and said, hey, I want to tell you something. And I said, what? He said, I just want you to know how this goes down. I'm like, I want to know. And he goes, if you want to know, I want to tell you. And I go, oh my God, I want to know. How do we get picked for the gig? You know? And he goes, me and another guy and Mick are the ones that choose the bands, but Mick doesn't go hunting. It's me and another fella. We put a playlist together for Mick and we give him what we think should go out, what makes sense, what's relevant, what we think they'd like. And then we give that to Mick. And he said, specifically with your band, Mick Jagger pointed at the screen when it was playing and said, these guys, I want to take these guys. And he goes, I just want you to know that he heard you and was pointing to you and specifically wanted you. And that meant a lot to me.
Oh, my God. Do you know specifically what he heard?
I don't know.
A record
track.
Or song? Or?
I don't. I don't know.
I would love to have known that.
I think that was enough in the moment that I just went, oh, my God, yes.
Right. Of course.
Because everybody wants to tell us, oh, you know, especially in social media. I wonder how much those guys paid. To get that gig.
Oh, they thought you bought onto it?
Yeah, and I'm sure I've seen the social media dickheads say this with Sabbath, too. Oh, yeah. It just goes to show you. I saw those guys. It sucked. They bought that for sure. The label paid. We were on earache at the time. I assure you, they weren't buying me a pack of gum.
But you know, the way you're building this band and the way you're seeing the results of all this work, it's got to feel good to you, man, because you're doing it the old school way. I mean, everything you're doing here is you start on an indie label. You've just graduated to a major label. You've put in all this touring. You're in the van in your underwear, you know, going through
Being
Europe
show,
with no
show,
air
yeah.
conditioning. You know, it's
you know what the truth is? It's exactly how I wrote it. Start out, take 10 years to become famous. Drink hot Red Bulls and smoke cigarettes with no air conditioning in Italy.
But Scott, no, let me ask you though, seriously. It might not be the way you wrote it, but don't you think that it will have the residual effect of what you're building will be much better than if you would have come out one song, one album went boom. Would you have preferred that, or do you think it would have been a quick burn if that happened?
At the time, I would have totally preferred it, but at the time, I was already experienced and I'd already signed a deal to Atlantic and already played a long time in my life.
Right, because you were in a band before Rival Sons, right?
I was in several bands, yeah, but I was in specifically a band called Human Lab that signed to Atlantic, and the record didn't come out. But I have a life in music, and so do all my guys. This wasn't our first rodeo.
Right, so and, you weren't the kids starting out. You're like, no, I mean, get this shit going.
We were young, but we were kids, you know what I mean? And we all had experience with record labels and managers and how to do things. That's why we wrote the right deal. And to this day, we own all of our records and all of our publishing. Like, we kept our business, so we could not be charting in the U.S. and survive. Mm. The little bit we made went a long way because we had ownership of it, and we still do. But to comment on the point about doing it, getting dirty, doing it the long form, and having that like have a residual
slow build, yeah.
The slow build. Yeah. I actually did say something to that early on in the career, all jokes aside, that the problem with rock and roll right now is there's not a band with like the dirt under their nails, like their hands bleeding from doing it. That's like riding around in the van and cheating death and doing it dirty. That a band that you can look at and go, yeah, dude, that's not bullshit. They had to put their money where their mouth was, and they had to like really do it. This is when we started, and I kind of said to the band, we should just be that band. You know, we talked about it. We should be that band. Get in the van. So when we signed to Earache, we didn't get any advance money. They were going to give us a very little bit of money. And what they did was buy us a van. That's what we got. So when we signed our deal, we got a Ford Econoline.
Oh, so they bought you the shitty van.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we got the van. That was our signing bonus, a touring vehicle that we would drive into the ground and nearly kill ourselves crossing over, you know, from New York to L.A. and into Canada, across Canada. Like, yeah, death-defying shit. We've cheated death several times.
Oh, my gosh.
It's scary. I always tell people the same thing. It took us a long time to make any money. It cost me a marriage. It cost me a lot. It cost everybody a lot in the group, and it's what it is. You don't do this job because you want to be famous. It's not enough. You don't do the job because you want to make a bunch of money. We don't make that much money. And people barely just know who we are right now, and we've been doing this band for 10 years now. That's, I have no regret. There's a bigger reason to do rock and roll, and that's because that's just what you are. That's what's going to come out. if I'm making no money and playing at a pub, if I'm becoming very famous and playing to 80,000 a night, it's kind of the same. I have to do it either way, and the guys I play with are like that.
That's what I think is one of the many things that makes your band so special. I mean, it resonates. You can tell. And you talk about what it costs you. When you say it costs you those things because of the finances or just because you've been on the road constantly? Or
all of that.
All of it.
Yeah. All of it you think that goes with it. Yeah. You're not coming home. You become disconnected to people at home because you're not home. Because
when you guys tour, you'll be gone months and months at a time, right?
We were gone a lot more early on, but it became a thing where, gosh, we have to maintain with children and stuff. We have to maintain families and stuff. So it's
a lot
like,
of FaceTiming and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe people used to do it without that.
Yeah.
You think about the 70s, 80s, 90s. But you think about any of these bands.
But just even the cell phone. I mean, you can pick up a cell phone and you can call. You couldn't do that back in the day.
Like you see the, for lack of a better example, like in Almost Famous when he's like calling home and they have that like giant briefcase phone, like rotary dial,
cell phone. Yeah.
Like, dude, you're going to a payphone. You're just like looking. How the hell are you talking to your people at home? You're just hoping they pick up. Not even answering machines in the early days.
Right.
It's just like, gosh, I hope I catch them.
Yeah. Do you like all the touring though? I mean, you got to do it. But do you like it, or are you more of a studio rat? If you do, for instance, Metallica, who are at a whole different level, of course.
Yeah.
They go and they're doing a thing now because of the touring and being away so much. They go and they'll do 2 weeks on, a week off, 2 weeks on, a week off. They can afford to do that.
I want what they got.
That would be your preference if you could do that?
I think it's touring smarter than longer. We toured hard for a long, long time, and it's a lifestyle, and I'm not trying to take it back or change it. I like it, and it made us who we are. It gave us, you know, it made us sharpen our sword in a certain way and gave us a certain, I had the tiger that you can't fake. You can't like walk. You can't want that walk. You got to like earn it. You got to walk that walk to get it. You know, how do you say? You want your rock and roll bands to be seasoned and built in and beat in, and you just can't manufacture that. No label can like put enough money or imaging or bullshit, because rock and roll fans, man, they're gonna smell that rat. If it's, so you're trying to make this band look like they've been around, like there was that guy that just like bought his own tickets.
Oh yeah.
So many. Yeah. So this kind of shit. What is it?
Threaten. Jared Threaten.
Jared Threaten guy.
Threaten. Yeah. That's the guy. We talked about that story. That's crazy. He's going to go back for their big reunion show in a year. The exact same place where he sold no tickets. Seriously. I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. To your point, Scott, about growing here in America, you know, I'll be honest with you, it kind of still bums me out a little bit, because I still, after all the stuff you've done in the U.S., now it's changing now, thankfully, but I still talk to rock fans. They're like, I don't know them. And I'm like, what? Like, there's six, seven records. But they just did the whole Sabbath tour. But it's coming around because you got sold out shows in advance on the tour.
I think I stopped being angry about that like 5 years ago. I can't. It's like not something I'm going to hang on to and go, you know.
There's nothing you can do about it. You're doing everything in your power about it. But the word still needs to get out there.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, you're seeing great turnouts on this upcoming tour, right?
It's going great.
It's
I'm not going to complain. We're happy. And we've gotten happy over the years with our growth. Every year. It's grown every year. So it's not like we had a year where it went boop. You know, like the record that probably didn't do the best was the one before this one, believe it or not, was Hollow Bones. Due to the lack of activity with our label working it, and it just didn't get worked.
Did they
right.
know that you were leaving at that when that record came out?
They had an inkling for sure. So but they still they still had a life on the record. Like, they still have lessons on that record now, so you think they would keep working it. But the ironic thing is, guess what we were doing while that record came out?
Working on this one?
No, we were out with Black Sabbath for 13 months. You think they'd seize that opportunity. Like, we're on the most important tour on planet Earth. It's important, this tour.
Farewell tour, yeah.
It's very important. Everything is sold out. It's a world tour. We should probably work extra hard. We'll probably break the band on that tour. They didn't.
Mm.
But we can't really... Not about the kicking rocks thing.
Mm. I don't want the show to end without specifically talking about Feral Roots. I'm getting hung up. Feral Roots. Phenomenal, phenomenal record. Do Your Worst, the lead track, which you said went number one at Active.
Yeah, man.
Which is incredible. Did you anything different the way you put this record together when you went in to write it and work on it? Is there any different process at all?
It was very different. Yeah, generally I will write it home on my own. And not really share it with anyone. I'll just kind of backlog it and record stuff. Jay will do the same thing. He'll write and keep it to himself. We might touch a little bit on ideas, but not really until we're in the studio and talking. And then we'll immediately, while we're in studio, very quickly exchange ideas and immediately take them into the room and immediately record them. And what happens is you start hearing on the album, you know, first, second, third takes of times we've ever played the song. We'll keep that on a record. And that's how a lot of our records, we've done a lot of things. This album, we actually had time because we came off that Sabbath tour. We switched labels. We switched management. We changed our teams. We changed hands. We like did something different this time. And me and Jay decided, let's take a minute and really write together. You know, so we went to Southern Tennessee into this little cabin in the middle of nowhere. And spent just over a week there exchanging ideas and really coming up with the concept and an idea of where we wanted to go with this writing-wise, lyrically. The feel, the ethos of this record, I guess you'd say. And we took instruments out there and like played out loud, you know, and made fires and kind of just got into it. And would listen to what we recorded during the day at night and then came home and then passed things back and forth. He's in Franklin, Tennessee, and I'm in Huntington Beach, California. And we would just through modern technology pass things back and forth and work on each other's songs until we felt like we had something. Then we'd go in for a week into Nashville's RCA Studio A with Dave Cobb and I'll get in there and record just for a week, just the way we record normally, pretty much live, but giving everyone the songs, like here's what the songs are. And then we'd come home after that week and go back and forth for a couple few months writing, So we were really able to like hone in on these songs and spend some time and reflect on what we recorded the week before, go write, go record for a week, come home again. And we did that, you know, in a few sessions. I think the whole recording time was still like 20 days or something. It was still short.
It's I want to ask you about a couple of specific songs, because the whole record, top to bottom, I said this to you off the air before we started talking. I did with bands I love, I listened to the record the way I wanted to, which for me is a CD with my big speakers and tune everything else out and just dedicate the 45 minutes or whatever the running time is to this record to listen to it. And my gosh, did it just blow me away. A couple songs I want to ask you about that just immediate favorites. Too Bad.
Yeah, man.
Massive. Massive. Just, oh, God, I love that shit. Tell me about that song.
So Jay had given me a song that sounded like, we listen to a lot of soul and rhythm and blues and stuff too, even newer stuff. It sounded a lot like a track from like D'Angelo's Voodoo. Like, it sounded like a D'Angelo track. It's what he kind of had. All he had, he'll write a lot on bass, and that's what it was. It was like a thing that went boom, tch, boom, boom, tch, boom, tch, boom, boom. And he's singing the verse. I've known you and get you think to boom, 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 boom. That's what he had, you know. And I'm like, that's shit hot, because I listen to that a lot, that kind of music. And I'm going, I love it. We can do something with that. And then we just kind of left it. It went away. We didn't think about it again. And then about, I want to say halfway through the recording session, you know, our second big session, I think we were in already. I got a new Gretsch guitar that I was really in love with, and I had brought it to the sessions and was sitting at home right before we came in and had written and riffed around a whole bunch and wrote this riff that's at the top of Too Bad, that main riff. And I kind of wrote that and then had my own song idea. And I went, I have this idea. I came in, I said, it's hot. It's good. This is going to be good. I have a feeling for it, you know. Let me put some gadgetry on it and show you what it's going to sound like in the big room. And then everyone started to play it, and everyone heard this riff. And Dave Cobb immediately came in and said, that shit hot. We're doing that now. I go, I have these other parts. And Dave, just out of nowhere, Dave Cobb said, what about that other song that Jay was doing? That, like, rhythm and blues thing with that thing you're
so
doing right
there.
So
two songs come together.
It's full chocolate peanut butter,
wow,
baby.
Wow, that is amazing, man. Two completely different worlds colliding, but that song is just, gosh, it's just mass. Are you going to do that live?
Oh, every night.
Oh, I got to see it.
Every
night. I
can't
wait. I love the whole record, man. Back in the Woods.
Cool thing about it, I want to just give you this tidbit since you really like that one. That was the first time we played that song after we made the arrangement. That was the first take that's on the record.
Really?
The solo that's on the record, guitar solo.
Which I love.
Was improvised, because all we said was, this is where we're going to put a solo. And instead of leaving it to go cut it later, I cut that live on the floor. I had replaced nothing. That is the solo I cut off the floor.
I love, look, I've always loved your playing, but I really love the guitar sounds. And you're, to me, even lead guitar wise, you're playing a little bit more on this record, it sounds like to me. I don't know if I'm just, you know, because I love the record so much, but I love, like, the guitar sounds are just...
We're quite guitar-y.
Oh, so good. Well, that's me. I mean, there's never too many guitars for me, Scott.
Well, thank you for
that. And it is just killer. Before I run out of time, I mean, I love Back in the Woods. I love Look Away. I want to ask you about the last song on the record before I run out of time, Shooting Stars,
sure,
which has this amazing chorus on it.
Yeah.
Tell where'd you find them? Who is that?
This song was one of the toughest songs on the record, because it was something that Jay wrote while we were in session. And it's one of the only, I think it's the only song in the history of the band. We cut it three times. We don't do that. We cut it three.
So the opposite of Too Bad.
Yeah. We cut it three times, three different ways. We finished the song three times. There's a lot going into that. It's like where you lay the bed, you kind of conceptualize a feel, you get the right drum sound, you get all the, I track guitars on it, and then we listened to it and got it all mixed up and kind of went, okay, do we have something here? That's good. It's not right. Scrap, start from the ground up again, and then did that. It's so close. It's not right. Boom, start over again. And this last time we knew. I just had known that when Jay, you know, for me, I always thought, man, the the way that song sounds the best is when Jay plays it in the room, when he's showing us this song. Like, here's the song. That's a great song, dude. But it just seemed like every time we would track it, it just came off a little schmaltzy or something. Like, but this doesn't sound like our band. Mm. So we finally took this treatment with it, and it just fit really, really good, which is still very live and very off the cuff and still very visceral in the room when we cut it. I'm terrible about this stuff. That song is the only one on the record that I didn't like co-write with Jay, because I was working on everything else while he was working on that at the other studio. So
where did the choir come from?
This was the thing. I think this was Dave Cobb's idea. He works with choirs and you know, orchestras and stuff.
With Jay's voice, which, you know, I think the best singer out there today is the singer in your band, Jay Buchanan. But his voice with the vocals, with the choir, is just unreal.
It's nice.
It's amazing. And I want to...
Really proud of him.
I mean,
did a good job.
I love Jay's voice, and I love your playing, but shout out to the rhythm section too, man.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Miley just... this guy's unbelievable.
He's a madman. Yeah. Yeah, both him and Dave did a great job on the record. Could not be prouder. That's how we are as a band. You know, there's a lot that goes into it, and everybody wants to be heard and have their voice be heard and wants to represent themselves and represent the band and do the best thing. And it gets hard in the middle. It gets hard. And at the end of it, when you finally have it and it's mixed and it's done, we were really proud enough to kind of all look at each other and, like, you know, you feel a little like choked up, and you want to hug your guys and go, good job. We did it. We did it. It was hard. You got your ass kicked a little bit on this one, but it's really good, man.
You guys got a lot of records now to pick a set list from. I mean, you figure out what you're going to do from this live besides Too Bad? Or are you going to do a good amount of the record?
We just came off the European tour. We played the first few nights. We played 10 of the 11 tracks.
Off of this.
And the rest of the tour, we played 9 every night.
Well, I got no problem with that, because when a band makes a new record that I think is great, like, yeah, I feel about Feral Roots, that makes me excited.
Thank you.
Because I want to hear, you know, of course I want to hear, you know, some of the key older tracks, without a doubt, but... No problem with you doing this, and like the whole thing. I'd be fine with you doing it in sequence, the whole thing, you know?
And that, I mean, it's hard because for us, it's like such our child or whatever. It seems so like, let's do that. That's what we should do. But then I saw the Black Crowes and Oasis play on that Brotherly Love tour, and the Crowes were on their Lions album, and I took my dad to that show at the Greek Theater here in town, and the Black Crowes came out and played no old songs
at all.
You
can't do that.
Dude, with all those great records, like the really great records,
yeah.
Southern Harmony, Amorica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. They played not a single one.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Not even the corny ones we heard too many times. I would have taken those.
No, I still want to hear Pressure and Time. And
You're going to hear Electric Man. You're going to hear Electric Man.
All right. See, we're good. See, I'm fine. You get no complaints from me.
Okay. we'll satisfy. And I think without... It's difficult, but, you know, you don't want to pat yourself on the back and go, yeah, but our record, we made a record, you can play every song. But we felt like we did have a record on our hands that was like, this record feels important to us. More than we're important and this record's important, we felt like, it's good, let's try it, let's see. For us, it's important. Let's just see if it translates, and it's been going really good with the audience.
Well, obviously, I love that band. You got to check out Feral Roots. It's out there right now. See the band on tour. And my thanks to Scott Holiday of Rival Sons for spending some time with me on this week's show. Again, all the interviews are courtesy of my daily radio show on Sirius XM. Listen to me every day on Channel 106 Volume, live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Replay every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, or on demand on the Sirius XM app. If you listen on the podcast, you're only getting a tiny, tiny sample of what I do on a daily basis live on Sirius XM. And if you're one of those people that tell me they listen on YouTube, well, you're getting, God knows what you're getting, because I'm not posting it. So you could be getting anything, or a portion of anything, or something wildly out of context. So please join me if you're in the U.S. and Canada on Sirius XM for my daily show, and hear all the interviews, all the interaction, everything in its entirety, all the comments, all the phone calls, all the good stuff is happening daily on 106 Volume. Hope you enjoyed that interview, and check out Rival Sons for sure. Scott Holiday, by the way, on this new album, some of the coolest guitar playing and guitar sounds and tones, just monster stuff. All right, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is produced by Katie Irizarry.
It's new every Thursday, podcast1.com, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great week. I'll see you next Thursday for another all-new episode.
Podcast One.
Could this be a serial killer? You'd never think it could happen in a community like this.
Cold Case Files, Season 4.
The case would take several twists and turns.
I mean, you're kind of, in essence, looking for a needle in a haystack.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
Now it starts to fit.
The discovery will seal the fate of a serial killer.
So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die.
She just screams and pleads for her life.
Get new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.